So we've been going through these sutras, one sutra at a time. And currently we are in chapter 2, basically. So almost toward the last phase of this discussion, because we started more than a year ago, I think. And we did chapter 1, then we jumped to the end of chapter 2, which is the eight limbs of yoga. We did all that. And we did a sequence on detailed discussion on meditation. And now we're starting at, right now we are in the middle of chapter 2. We started with the first sutra in chapter 2. So that's where we are. And just as a very brief kind of a overview, the chapter 2 is a combination of discussions. It starts out by discussing what's klesha. The term klesha is the Sanskrit term used for which I think the closest translation, modern term translation, would be stress. Everyone goes through stress and suffering. So the close translation for klesha. Klesha is in general just any kind of affliction, pain, suffering of any kind, stress of any kind, that's klesha. So we went through the theory of kleshas, and Patanjali has given us five different kind of reasons for klesha, or five different types of klesha, whatever you want to call it. Does everyone remember the five kleshas? Avidya. Ignorance, first one, yeah. Then?
Egoism. Egoism.
Egoism, yes.
Attachment,
yes.
Hatred.
And
clinging to bodily life.
Clinging to bodily life means fear of death. So those are the five, what Patanjali calls kleshas. Ignorance, avidya in Sanskrit. Asmita is the word he uses for egoism or ego, asmita. Then raga is attachment or likes, strong likes, that's raga. Dvesha is dislike or hatred. And finally, abhinivesha is the
fear of death
or just, you know, abhinivesha, in the literal sense, it means the desire to maintain status quo, basically. That's the literal meaning.
So that could be much more than fear of death.
More than fear of death, yes. It's fear of almost anything. Eventually. But then most commentators say eventually it's all boils down to fear of death.
Fear of change?
Fear of change, yes, absolutely. Fear of change. Okay. So that's the klesha part. And then Patanjali continues to discuss. In chapter 2, we have also seen stuff related to karma, theory of karma. So if you were to go through these very, very quickly, the Sutra 2.1 was Kriya Yoga. Does everyone remember Kriya Yoga? Tapas, Swadhyaya, Ishvara, Pranidhana, three activities. Tapas means what?
Discipline.
Pain, austerity, not pain. Austerity. Tapas is austerity. Heat. Tapas. So Swadhyaya means?
Isn't tapas also self-discipline?
Yes. Self-discipline, austerity. Yeah, that's very true. And then Swadhyaya means?
Study of the scriptures
to understand yourself. And Ishvara Pranidhana means to surrender to a higher entity called Ishvara. And these three, when practiced, they comprise what's called Kriya Yoga. Okay? And then the purpose of Kriya Yoga was to attain Samadhi as well as minimize or diminish the Kleshas. Remember Kleshas? We are going to talk about now. So it says the whole purpose of Kriya Yoga, those three activities, is to get closer to the state of Samadhi as well as to diminish these five Kleshas. That's how he introduces the term Klesha into the picture. Okay, so these are the five Kleshas that we just talked about. Avidya, Asmita, Raga, Dvesha, Abhinivesha. Ignorance, ego, likes, dislikes, and fear of death. Okay. And then these are the definitions of different kleshas. Do you want me to go through these or skip these? No, we've done these before. What do you say? Which way?
I'm brand new, so
quickly go through them. Okay. Why don't we just read the definition? So one of you read it aloud, and then we'll go through it. All right, start with Aaron.
Ignorance is the field for the others mentioned after it, whether they be dormant, feeble, intercepted, or sustained.
Okay, so what it's saying is that the kleshas can be in these four states of being. They can be either feeble, dormant, or active, basically. So prasupta is sleeping, dormant. That means they have been there. They are hiding very deep into your subconscious levels. Those are the prasupta kleshas. Tanu means they are diminished, okay, somewhat diminished. And vichinna means they are coming and going. Sometimes they are on, sometimes they are off, on and off, up and down, basically. And then udaranam. Udara means they are very active at this point. So if you have a cup of coffee in front of you and you're desperate to have a cup of coffee, that's a strong like. Okay, and that's udara at that time. That's active. At that time, your desire to go on a vacation may be very subdued. It may be there. You might have thought about it 2 days ago, but it's not quite as active as is the desire to have that cup of tea or coffee right now. So that's how Patanjali describes these different states of these kleshas. Okay, so they can be either dormant, feeble, intercepted, or sustained. You get the idea? I mean, this is the rough idea of how these things are described here. Okay, then what is avidya? How the definition of avidya? Eleanor, you want to read that definition?
Ignorance is regarding the impermanent as permanent, the impure as pure, the painful as pleasant, and the non-self as self.
Right, you get a rough idea? That's ignorance. When we don't realize the reality of situation and we think otherwise, basically. Knowing full well that this piece of cake is not good for me, but you like it still, okay? It's painful eventually, but we think it's very pleasant. That's the kind of situation that we are in, where it's called avidya. And ultimate cause of avidya is not knowing who I am. I think this my body is who I am and what I am, but that's not true. Okay, so that's the final, ultimate avidya or ultimate ignorance. But there are all these life examples. What is asmita?
Egoism.
So you want to read that?
Egoism is the identification, as it were, of the power of the seer, Purusha, with that of the instrument of seeing, body, mind.
Do you get the idea?
Yeah, I think this is our...
Everyone get the idea?
So you think that you are the body, mind.
Yes.
In reality, you are
You are beyond that. You are to transcend the body-mind limitation and get to the point where you start recognizing yourself as the pure consciousness or Purusha. But our identification with this body-mind complex is what's causing the ego to raise its head, and that's what is causing all the problems. That's asmita. Okay, what is raga?
Attachment is that which follows identification with pleasurable experiences.
Right, it's very simple. I mean, you like something, cup of coffee is a very good example. When you like it, you get attached to it. Then you want more of it. So you just follow that liking, you know. Okay, so that's raga. So you have, once you like a cup of coffee, you want more of it, you're attached to it. That's called raga. Attachment is called raga. Got it? Is this, okay? I mean, angle-wise, it's okay, the screen? It's okay? Okay, abhinivesha. Karen?
We skipped dvesha.
Oh, we skipped dvesha?
Yeah.
Hold on.
Same slide. It's right underneath there.
Oh, I see. Okay. I didn't realize. Okay, dvesha.
Aversion is that which follows identification with painful experiences.
Right.
You want the painful experiences to go away.
To go away, right. We create aversion or hatred or dislike for anything that's painful. Okay? That's dvesha. So you had a very unpleasant encounter with somebody, you know, in the family or in the friend circle, and then you start developing a dislike for that person. You don't want anything to do with that person, you don't want to be close to that person, and you develop dvesha. That's what it is called, dvesha. Animosity, or dislike, all these words are okay. Okay, abhinivesha. Dave?
Clinging to life flowing by its own potency due to past experience exists even in the wise.
Right. Vidusha. Vidusha is somebody who is very wise, who's very learned and wise. He knows what life is all about. Even they who know life very well, even they are afraid of death. That's the whole idea. You know, when they come, anybody who comes close to death or very comes close to even some serious sickness, then they start fearing that death, you know, very, very seriously. So everyone is very afraid of death. And like I said, abhinivesha, the literal meaning is to cling to, you know, the present status. You don't like change. You are afraid of change. That's abhinivesha. Comes from vish. Vish means to enter. Nivesh means to enter and stay there. And abhinivesh is to stay there permanently or something like that. So these are all Sanskrit derivations. Okay. Then what's the next one? So, you know, like we said, there are subtle forms of these kleshas and they are very strong or obvious forms of kleshas. Okay? So, the subtle ones can be destroyed by resolving them back to the unmanifest prakriti. Now, this is a topic we discussed last time and, you know, we had some doubts, at least I had some doubts, and we went and talked to her, one of her friends, who was a teacher at Yogaville, and she also wasn't sure. She wasn't sure. You know, she could not answer the questions that we had.
I probably didn't answer. Ask her correctly.
I don't know. Whatever is the reason. We didn't come to any kind of conclusion.
No.
She said she would find out from somebody else, but she never did. Yeah.
She did. I didn't understand. So.
So Prakriti and Purusha is, you know, we have to go back to this philosophy called Sankhya philosophy. Okay, there are six different philosophical streams in India, Indian thought. And Sankhya and Yoga are two of the philosophies that we are concerned with. There are four others, okay? Now, Yoga philosophy by Patanjali is largely based on some of the very basic tenets of the Sankhya philosophy. Sankhya is one of the oldest philosophies in India. Very old, much older than Yoga. Okay? And it is a part of the Sankhya philosophy where it says that there are two entities which are eternal and both real. And they are called Purusha and Prakriti. Now, we understand Prakriti very well. You know, Prakriti is everything that we can feel, touch, sense, and experience. That's Prakriti. That means this whole material universe is a part of Prakriti. I am a part of Prakriti. When I say I include everything that I can be, that I can think of. I means the way I look at it myself now. I have a body, I have a mind, I have an intellect, I have thoughts, I have feelings, I have emotions, I have memories, everything. All that, including intellect, including our so-called wisdom, all experiences from the past, this life and previous lives, everything is called Prakriti. Purusha is pure consciousness. Purusha is just nothing but pure consciousness, which is also called the soul or the Atma or the Self with a capital S. All those are terms for Purusha. Now, what the Sankhya philosophy says, it's only Purusha which has consciousness. Prakriti, that means my mind, body, intellect, etc., have no consciousness of their own. So how do they function? They function based on borrowed consciousness from the Purusha. Because of the proximity of these two entities, the intellect is able to borrow consciousness from the Purusha and then function in life. So all the intellectual functions, all the memory functions, all the thinking, everything is done based on the borrowed consciousness from Purusha. Some people call it borrowed, some people like to use the term reflected consciousness, depending on who you read. That's how they describe that, reflected or borrowed consciousness. And then Prakriti, of course, is that composite of 23 elements. I've done it almost every time. Does everyone remember these 23 elements now by heart? Everyone? 23 elements. Because that's very important to kind of remember that we are a composite of 23 elements. Okay, let's start reading them. No? Okay, let me go through that. It might take some time. Very simply, then. First is the intellect, then ego, then the mind. Those are the three at the higher level. Then at the slightly lower level are the five sense perceptions, perception of touch, taste, smell, etc., sense perceptions. Five sense organs. The organ of touch is skin, organ of smell is nose, organ of hearing is ear, etc. So five sense perceptions and five sense organs. Then five organs of action. What are the five organs of action? Hands, feet, tongue.
Reproduction.
Elimination. Okay, five organs of action. So that makes us 18, right? 5 plus 5 plus 5, 15. And then 3, 18. What are the last five?
Earth, water, fire, subtle elements. Is that the earth, water, air, fire, ether?
Yes. Okay. Earth, fire, water, air, and ether. 5. So these are the 23 elements which comprise this human being as a part of Prakriti.
Does potentially talk about those in the sutras?
No. Tangentially, yeah, but not directly.
But not directly. He doesn't say the 23 elements.
Okay. No, he doesn't say that, but it comes up in multiple places. Because he assumes that you know that.
Okay.
He assumes that you're aware of this because he has already trained his students into various aspects of life, and he assumes Sankhya philosophy is something that you know very well. Mm-hmm. So that underlying assumption is there in many sutras.
I mean, it makes sense. I can see it now that you mentioned the 23 elements, but I've never seen it referred in anything I've read.
But there are sutras which talk about these.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Different aspects in different places.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. But not directly, no. No. That you will see only in the Sankhya philosophy. Okay. Okay, so the unmanifest Prakriti here refers to the Prakriti which is before its manifestation into these 23 elements. That's called unmanifest. Now, it all has to do with the three gunas. Does everyone know what the three gunas are? Mm-hmm. What are the three gunas?
Rajas.
And?
Sattva.
Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. Okay. Now, when these three gunas are in perfect state of balance, that's called unmanifest Prakriti. When they are in perfect balance, then there is no manifestation, there's no creation, then there's no intellect, no ego, no nothing.
Then are we Purusha?
Hmm?
Are we Purusha?
No. At that point we are Prakriti. It's called Mula Prakriti. Mula Prakriti is the root Prakriti. Purusha is true consciousness, okay? That means at that point, I have realized the true separation between Purusha and Prakriti. So there is separation. So I am Purusha and the Prakriti is separate. Okay? Everyone got that? So that's the unmanifest Prakriti or the Mula. It's also called Mula Prakriti, root Prakriti. What's that? When all the three gunas are in perfect balance. Okay. So, what the claim is, you know, according to Sankhya philosophy, when the Purusha, at some point in time, the Purusha and Prakriti come in close proximity with each other. Now, there is no explanation anywhere given how this process starts. No explanation given. And it just says that it starts. You know, Purusha gives a nudge to Prakriti, let's have some fun. And the moment that nudge happens, the Rajas guna becomes more dominant. Rajas is the one which involves action, activity, creation, etc., etc. So the moment that nudge happens, Rajas becomes dominant and it starts the process of creation. Okay, and then these gunas start being in a state of turmoil. They are all the time completely going up and down. Sometimes the sattva is more dominant, sometimes the rajas is more dominant, sometimes the tamas is more dominant. And then there is a constant shuttle going on between these three. But the more dominant rajas is in the beginning, that's why creation happens. And the creation have also, you know, the way they claim, again, there is no explanation given how that is programmed or how that is understood, but that's what they say. First, intellect is created first, then ego, then manas, and then the five sense perceptions, and then everything else comes into. I don't understand all that. But that's the progression given, and they don't give any explanation. This is it. Okay, so that's how the creation happens, especially when we talk of the human creation, that's how it goes. Okay, but when the whole idea of these yoga practices is to eventually bring the gunas back into that same balance. Once they are back into the same balance, you are back into the mula prakriti, and there is no more churning of the mind going on. At that point, the mind becomes perfectly pure, clean, tranquil, peaceful, and without any disturbance. And you can function without any pain or suffering at that time.
So that's also one of the, I guess, the goals of yoga.
Hmm?
That's also a goal of yoga.
That's the goal of yoga.
That's all the
yes. Okay. And the next one. Okay, you want to read that again, Aaron?
We forgot 11.
We forgot 11? What am I doing? Yeah. Oh.
That's what I'm saying. That's what we just said.
Okay. You want to read that, one of you? Right. So what we said was, when they are in the very subtle state, they can be destroyed by bringing them back to the original matrix, as it's called, in Pratiprasava. That was the previous sutra. And if they are in the active state, they can be somewhat diminished by meditation. Now, that was my question to your friend, that even to bring them back to the original state, you have to do meditation, basically. But then I thought about it a little more after, you know, we talked. Okay? So here, I think what is happening is that now we have to start distinguishing between the three stages of meditation. One is dharana, one is dhyana, and one is samadhi. Okay? Now, samadhi is the much higher state of meditation. So my assumption is that this one, when they are very subtle, then you need the highest state of samadhi to bring them back to the original state. Okay? He has not used the word samadhi, but the very fact that he wants us to go back to the source of creation, source of the entire 23 elements, you need the highest state of samadhi. So now here we are talking of samadhi. Whereas in the next sutra, we are talking of dhyana. Dhyana is the lower state of meditation.
Just concentration?
There's more concentration on your object of meditation, prolonged periods of concentration. And when you do that, you can diminish the vrittis, which are these surface level vrittis, which are more active at this time. So this is what my thought is. You know, at that time, you know, we didn't think about that.
Yeah.
But you know, when I started re-examining the whole thing, that's what I thought. So that's kind of the thought where I am right now. Yeah. Did we cover? Now we are okay? We did this, right? Okay. Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's read this one, Eleanor.
The womb of karma's actions and reactions has its root in these obstacles, and the karmas bring experiences in the seen, present, and the future births.
Right. So what does this mean now? Did we do this sutra last time or we finished at 11? I think we finished at 11.
Yeah.
Okay, so we need to do this then. Okay. So let's start by reading the Sanskrit. Repeat after me. Klesha mulaha karmashayaha drashta adrishta Janma Vedaniya.
Janma Vedaniya.
Again, one more time. Klesha Moolaha. Karmashayaha. Drishta. Adrishta. Janma. Vedaniyaha. Okay, so that's the Sanskrit. Again, we already read the meaning. The karma, klesha, moolaha is the root or the womb. Okay, so the idea here is this word karmashaya. Karmashaya means the storehouse or the bag full of karmas. This is where all the samskaras are stored. Now, this is basically a lot of karma theory, you know. So karmashaya is the bag of karmas that we carry. You know, there are three types of karmas that are mentioned. Does everyone remember that? I talked about it last time, I think. What are the three karmas?
The ones that are going to happen in the future.
Yes.
The ones that can be prevented from happening. And the ones...
You don't know. Okay. Let me write these down. Let me see.
I think they're in the scripture book on page 91.
Page 91.
What's that?
Page 91 in the book. In this book, they're referenced on page 91.
Page 91?
Yes. Three kinds of karmas.
Oh, they are there?
Yes.
Okay. So, okay. So let's go over these three types of karmas. One is called the Sanchita Karma, S-A-N-C-H-I-T-A. Is that what it is written there?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Let me write it down so that everyone can see that. So one is Sanchita Karma, the other is Prarabdha Karma, and the other is Agami Karma. Okay.
So.
All right. Now, what is Sanchit Karma? Sanchit Karma is the...
Chapter 2, Sutra 12.
Okay.
What's that?
It's different in different books.
Different edition of this book.
Oh, really? I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. So what is Sanchit Karma? Sanchit means the total bank balance, so to say. You know, whatever bank balance you have at that moment, the total bank balance. Now, this Sanchit Karma is the collection of our samskaras from previous lives. And when we say previous life, it is not just one or two lives, but millions of lives, right from time immemorial. There's always some aggregation of karma that we carry with us. Okay? That's called...
Collection of samskaras.
Right. Collection of karma and collection of samskaras. Now, out of this entire collection, when we are born, at the time of birth, there is a certain subset of this collection that is given to us as the karma for this lifespan. That is called prarabdha karma. Prarabdha karma. Alright, so that's the karma that we are supposed to go through during this life. And that's what determines what family I'm going to be born into, what my lifespan is going to be, what kind of experiences I'm going to have, good, bad, what the color of my skin is going to be, how tall I'm going to be, it's everything. All that is determined by the prarabdha karma. And that you cannot avoid. That's something you cannot change. You have to go through that. If that says that at the age of 55 you will have cancer, you have to go through that, no matter what. That's how it is defined. But then there is the third karma, which is called the Agami karma. Is that the name he has given or some other term? Agami karma. Agami karma is what we control through our willpower, through our own actions. That's what we generate for future. That's what we're going to keep adding to our bag of karmas. Okay, so whether you do good deeds or bad deeds, pleasant or unpleasant, or desirable or undesirable deeds, whatever we do, it's going to create more karma for us, and it's going to add on to our bag of karmas. So again, there are people who will tell you that if you do good karma, it might nullify some of the bad karma that you've carried from the past, etc., etc. These things, nobody knows for sure what goes on, but these are very issues that nobody understands them, but yet this is how very commonly understood in our culture. Okay. So that's the karma concept of karma. Three different types of karma. All right. Now, klesha mulaha, what does that mean? Klesha means all these five different kleshas that we talked about. Again, remember, ignorance, ego, likes, dislikes, and fear of death. You should just memorize these things, five kleshas. Okay? So this karmashaya, this whole bag full of karmas, is a composite of all these, it's because of all these kleshas. Because we have all these kleshas, we have likes and dislikes, therefore we do action, and because we have action, we have experiences, and because we have experiences, we store everything into our samskaras.
Could you make a distinction between karma and samskara?
Karma is the action that you do, and the result that you get out of your actions. They are based on samskaras.
They seem to kind of overlap.
They do. In some sense, they do. But the karmashaya, the bag of karmas, basically carries samskaras. Samskaras, the actual experiences, the actual impressions that we have in the mind. Okay? So, for example, if I give charity, you know, some donation, then that will be called, that's an action, that's a karma. Okay. It's going to create an impression. Okay, and it's also going to indicate that it was designated as a good karma or a bad karma. Okay. All that is mentioned
that's
there.
All karma. Okay.
That's all karma.
Okay.
Now, samskara is, yes, this action was done, and it was a pleasant action or unpleasant action or whatever. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then there are all these other labels, good karma, bad karma, also put in there. Now, when whoever decides in the future birth.
Which ones you have to play out again.
Play out again. And which ones have been already played out, which have been nullified, etc., etc. All that decision is made. And we dished out a new life with new set of karmas in our bag. Okay, so but the key concept here is that it's the kleshas which cause karma. It's the klesha. If you have no kleshas, if you have no ignorance, then there's no problem. Then we don't create any more karma. That's it. Then the bag does not get affected. So
that's when you reach the liberation, self-realization.
Yes,
struggle.
That's right. That's the only time you reach self-realization, when there is no ignorance. So, because of this bag of karmas, this whole karmashaya, we have to now experience the fruits of our karma, either in this life or in a future life. Okay? Drishta means a life that can be seen, which is this life, present life. Adrishta means a life that cannot be seen, which is a future life. So that's how these words are used here. Drishta and Adrishta. And Janma is life. Okay, and Vedaniya means experienced. So all the karmas that we have in our karmasha, in our bag of karmas, they will bring out fruit which we have to experience either in this life or in a future life. This is the very crux of the karma theory that Patanjali has brought out in this sutra. Very fundamental concept of karma theory. That you have to experience no matter what.
So don't run away from your problems.
Don't run away from your problems.
You're going to get them no matter.
They'll get you. They'll catch up with you. They'll get you. Okay, if not now, next time. Sometimes you get a result very immediately, you know. You overeat, you get a stomachache right away. You get sick right away. Sometimes it's very subtle, you know. You overeat very slowly, but then it keeps adding on. You know, 20 years later, you get sugar problems, diabetes, and this and that. And you hurt somebody, it may not have any impact right now, but maybe in a future birth, who knows? That's what they say, if you kill an animal now, next time you will be an animal. I mean, these are just things that we heard while we were growing up, that's what our parents will tell us. Don't kill that animal. Don't kill that bird. You know, if you kill that bird, you'll become a bird next time. And somebody else will kill you. So everyone gets the idea? So these are just my notes based on what I read, just a few notes. So maybe one of you can read these notes. Laura, you want to read them?
Sure. Kleshas provoke karma, and karma in turn produces more kleshas.
Right. So this is a kind of an ongoing thing, cyclical. So when we have kleshas, we produce more karma because of the desires and hatreds that we have because of the kleshas. When we do more karmas, it produces more desires, more action. That means more raga and dvesha, more ignorance, more ego. It's just perpetual. Okay, next one.
Karmashaya, storehouse of karmas, stores results of good and bad deeds, samskaras.
Okay, that's clear, right? Good and bad deeds are all stored there. Next. You know, this is based on what I read from Vyasa's commentary. He says that these are the four reasons. But they are basically roughly the same as kleshas. You know, they correspond to the kleshas also. Lust. Lust is nothing but raga. Raga is likes and dislikes, and that creates lust and craving. Krodha is anger. You know, dvesha will bring about anger. So basically they are roughly corresponding with the five kleshas, but he has used these terms. You know, in our culture, they talk about these six as the very enemies of the mind. They are called ripus. Ripus means shadripu. Ripu means enemies. Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada and matsarya. There are two more. Kama is lust, krodha is anger, lobha is greed, moha is delusion, mada is arrogance, and matsarya is jealousy. So those are the six commonly mentioned as enemies of the human mind, and they drag us into misery. That's what they say.
Can so, I kind of refer back to the niyamas? So observe, you know, no greed, no anger. To follow those guidelines, then you don't have this.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Right. Okay.
So, any reason why the other two is not listed here?
I don't. That's like I said. This is from Vyasa's commentary. He just picked these four for whatever reason. Yeah.
Okay. Laws of karma apply when performed out of ego.
Right. So ahankara. It's only ahankara which will do these actions. When they are done without the ego, without the samskaras, then the karma is, like I said, then it's not applicable. Then there's no karma accrued when we do it from pure intellect. So it's the ego, when we do stuff based on the ego, that's when we create or accrue more karma in our bag.
The seeds of karma bring fruit either in this life or future lives, depending upon the intensity of the samskara.
Again, who knows what's going to bring fruit in this life and what's going to bring fruit in the next life. Somebody somewhere will decide all that for us. I don't know. Okay. So this is the next sutra. So the sutra is Sanskrit. Let's go through the Sanskrit first. Sati. Mule. Tadvipakaha. Tadvipakaha. Vipakaha. Jati. Ayuhu. Bhogaha. I'm just splitting the words so you know exactly what the individual words are, okay? I'm breaking the long words into shorter words. So one more time. Sati. Mule. Tadvipakaha. Jati. Ayuhu. Bhogaha. Okay. So somebody wants to read the meaning in English?
With the existence of the root, there will be fruits also. Namely, the birds of different species of life, their lifespans and experiences.
Okay. So as long as, so you remember we said in the Karmashaya, remember the previous one was Klesha Moolaha. Right? As long as the root of klesha is there, we're going to have experiences. So as long as those kleshas are at the root of our bag, basically when the bag is full of those roots of kleshas, their fruition is going to happen. Tadvipaka. Vipaka means fruition. That means they will bring fruit. When you have roots, and you have the environment right, you have the proper amount of soil and water and everything, it's going to bring fruit. That's going to happen. And what is the fruit? Fruit is those three. Okay? This is again very common in our culture to decide, to tell us that these three are the fruits. What are the three? You know, this will decide us, for us, which jati. Jati means what kind of life you will be born into, whether you'll be born into a human life, an animal or an insect life, or some kind of a celestial divine life, who knows. Okay, so those are the three broad categories of jati. And within that there are multiple subcategories in everything. Animal, what kind of animal? Insect, what kind of insect? Human, what kind of human, you know? So that's jati, a part of jati, subcategories and categories of jati. Then ayus means, or ayuhu means, the lifespan. Ayu means life. That's where the word Ayurveda comes from. Ayurveda means knowledge of life. Okay, Ayurveda. Veda means knowledge, Ayur means life. And here ayus means span of life. How long are you going to live? Okay, if you're born as a dog, you're going to be living a full life of 17 years, I don't know. Maybe. Okay, and bhoga means, what does the word bhoga mean? experience. What kind of experiences you're going to have in life and at what stage in your life you will have those experiences, all that is determined by this word bhoga. Whether it's going to be a pleasant experience, whether you're going to go sick, whether you're going to end up in the hospital, whether you're going to have an accident, whether you're going to have a pleasant experience with your friends, family, whatever, all those are determined by this word bhoga. So as long as the kleshas are there with us, we're going to have stuff in the karmasha and the storehouse of karmas, and we're going to have these three as the fruits of our karma.
So is the thinking on this that there's kind of like a hierarchy, you work your way up, or can you be jump around a lot? Like, could you be up at the high level and do something horrible and go all the way back down, or just
depends,
fall a little bit? Or?
Depends on what you do. You know, there are stories of even the highest level of yogis that they fall face down on the earth because they made some mistake. Even after attaining the highest level of consciousness, one slip and you can drop down. You know, there's a very famous yogi by the name Osho. Anybody heard the name? Osho? He was a very highly advanced yogi. Very highly.
How do you spell his name?
O-S-H-O. His name was Rajneesh. But he eventually started being called Osho. And he attained very high levels of consciousness. He gave commentaries on everything that's possible on earth, you know, on Vedas, Upanishads, Gita, Yoga Sutras, everything. I mean, he knew everything. You just name it and he would know it. Highest levels of consciousness, became a super teacher, guided hundreds and thousands of people. And guess what? Slipped. Toward the end of his life, somehow that ego got back into him. He was originally free of ego. Somehow it raised its ugly head, and he said, "Oh my God, I am so powerful. Let me make use of it." And he started buying, you know, all these Rolls Royce cars and personal jets, and had a whole slew of servants and women around him, started becoming a ruler, became a pest. And he was eventually thrown back to India from here. You know, he had a big ashram in somewhere in Seattle, I think somewhere.
So he's fairly current?
Hmm?
Yeah. He was current?
Yeah. He was what?
Current. This current.
Yeah.
He's still alive.
Just, decade, I guess,
just last decade he passed away.
Okay.
And then, of course, he was miserable in India. He had a big ashram. His ashram still runs very well in India. It's beautiful. But he became very ill and eventually died a very miserable life. And there are so many stories similar to that story in India, where people rise to a very big height and then suddenly... So, yes.
That their ego gets in, huh?
As soon as the ego gets into the play, you can drop dead.
You have to wonder if the ego was ever really totally gone.
Yeah, right.
Hmm?
That's you have to wonder if the ego was ever really totally gone.
That's what the whole point is, yes. It's one single step that you take wrong, and it can all rebuild by itself.
That seems hard to believe.
This is not very old. This is just recently.
Yeah, I know. It just seems like that if you were really pure, that one mistake could bring you back down.
Well, I think that's what I'm saying.
Right.
Maybe
the
whole
thing
really wasn't
the whole thing really the
yeah.
ambition to begin
right,
with.
Right,
yeah.
right,
yeah.
right.
You don't know.
That's what I would make more sense.
Well, the guy was so wonderful. I mean, you listen to his talks, amazing. And he was just full of wisdom, full of knowledge. Answer any questions, anything. Okay. And his teachings, still very valuable, so don't get me wrong. Very valuable. So again, jati means the life, the kind of birth we will have, animal, human, etc. And ayur means lifespan, and bhoga is the experiences in the life. Okay? So let's read my notes. This is just what I wrote down. So, Gail, you want to read this screen?
Okay. I am probably can't see that far.
Oh, no? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody, Aaron, you can read that or no? Karmashaya.
Karmashaya.
Yeah.
The storehouse of karmas determines three types of fruits in the next life. Jati, type of birth, human, animal.
You have to speak up a little.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. Raise the volume.
Okay. Jati, type of birth, human, animal species, or celestial realms.
Ayus. Ayuhu or Ayus, yeah.
Span of life. Experiences of life, pleasurable versus painful. At death, physical body disintegrates. Subtle body carries over to next physical body. Karmas that do not bring fruit in the next life can be destroyed, merged with a dominant karma, or remain dormant. With attainment of knowledge, ignorance, or other kleshas are destroyed. Then
karmashaya.
Karmashaya. Is a collection of burnt seeds which are unable to bring fruit.
Prarabdha karma.
Karma, or the karma allocated at birth, continues until physical death.
Okay. Does everyone understand these sentences, or they have doubts, questions? Everyone okay?
So the burnt seeds, he talks about that in the various levels of meditation, right?
Which one?
Burnt seeds.
Yes.
He talks about the seeds there and burning the seeds, getting rid of the seeds.
Different stages of meditation will take you to more and more clearer karmashaya.
So the burnt would be the ultimate.
Ultimate will be all the burnt seed. When the samskaras are no more effective, what they claim is that samskaras can never be destroyed. They can be made ineffective. And that ineffective, the term, Patanjali doesn't use the term burnt seed, it's the Vyasa, the commentator who uses the term burnt seed, Dagdha Bija in Sanskrit, that's the term he uses for burnt seeds. So what happens is, there's some seed that is not burnt, one seed in there, that may not be burnt, everything else isn't burnt. And that seed, once it brings fruit, and it can then mushroom into other things, and that's what brings the downfall of these things. You just need one seed somewhere, hidden somewhere in the background, you know, it can cause all kinds of damage. Okay. So this is the next one now. This is all karma theory, very detailed theory of karma. This is exactly what karma is all about. So let's read the Sanskrit. Te halad paritap phalaha punya apunya hetutvat. One more time. Te halad paritap phalaha punya, apunya, hetutvat. Okay, so what does it mean? Punya means good deeds, very simple. Punya means good deeds, apunya means bad deeds, very simple. And what do you classify as good deeds and bad deeds? That's very difficult to understand. That's not easy to define. Okay, but this is where our own, I guess, growth in spirituality will eventually keep telling us what is good and what is bad, what is not good. Okay, so we have to continually raise our spiritual level, that means the level of our consciousness, to make our intellect sharper, which will give us a better idea of what's good and what's not good. But whatever that is, what is considered good or bad, good deeds will bring you pleasure, that's halada. Bad deeds will give you pain, which is paritapa. So it's very straightforward. This is what we grew up, you know, my parents, were, everybody's parents in India would tell, if you do this, you'll have bad karma. If you do this, you'll have good karma. You know, this is how we grew up. Every time anything happens, my parents will tell that. Every parent in India talks about this karma theory. It's very common. So very simple. As you sow, so shall you reap. But, you know, the reap thing is not just in this life, but it can be any life.
Future. Since this is getting close to Easter, in the Christian philosophy, they believe that you can be forgiven and all of this goes away.
If you can forgive yourself, yeah.
If you can just be gone.
Yeah, so once you attain enlightenment, it's all gone.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, you're comparing that to enlightenment.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, that's how yoga is all about, right?
Yeah.
It's to attain enlightenment. Once you attain enlightenment,
you don't have to think about it,
then your karmas are gone. Then you're forgiven everything. It's all gone.
Yeah.
See, that's the whole concept in yoga, is in, or in our culture, is that when you... Let me see. Did I write it down? I did write it down. Okay. Let me explain that whole last sentence.
Until physical death.
We read it, but we didn't explain it.
Yeah, because I mean, if you're crippled, you're not going to become uncrippled just because you're enlightened, you know.
Right, right. So the point is that once you become enlightened, you will not accrue any fresh karma. That means your bag of karma will not get refilled, but whatever you were born with, remember at the time of birth, you were allocated a certain prarabdha karma. You have to go through that. So like I said, you are enlightened today at the age of 50, let's say. Then it says in the prarabdha karma that at the age of 55, you will have a motorcycle accident. You cannot avoid that. You will have to go through that, even though you're enlightened. Or you have to have certain miserable experience in life, whatever, you know, that. But that cycle continues. It's not that because of your enlightenment, you will not go through your prarabdha karma. Whatever you have been dished out for this lifespan, you have to go through that. But then, no more life after that. You're free. But if you are not enlightened, then you will be reborn. And what does that mean? Rebirth means what? What do you carry with you? Are you reborn with a clean slate every time?
No.
You will carry your karmashaya, that whole bag of karmas, which is called the subtle body. In the yoga terminology, it's called the sukshma sharira. Sukshma means the subtle body. The physical body will disintegrate. It will merge back into the five elements. No question. Physical body at the time of death disintegrates. It goes nowhere. But what goes with you is your complete set of subtle body. It's all your karmas, all your samskaras, all your vasanas, all your memories, everything that's associated with that area, that is attached to the next body then. And that becomes the subtle body of the next human physical body. Okay? So that's how it is all transferred into the next human body. Okay. Oh, I did mention it here. So three types of karma: prarabdha karma, sanchita karma, and agami. We talked about this, so we don't need to go through this. Okay. This one is a very difficult sutra to grasp. During our study group, we spent almost like 5 sessions on this sutra. We never got through it. Okay, let's go through the Sanskrit first. Parinama.
Parinama.
Tapa.
Tapa.
Sanskara.
Sanskara.
Dukkhaihi.
Dukkhaihi.
Guna.
Guna.
Vritti.
Vritti.
Virodhacha.
Virodhacha.
Dukkhameva.
Dukkhameva.
Sarvam. Vivekina.
Vivekina.
Okay. Parinama tap.
Parinama tap.
Sanskara dukkhaihi.
Sanskara dukkhaihi.
Guna vritti virodhacha.
Guna vritti virodhacha.
Dukkhameva.
Dukkhameva.
Sarvam.
Sarvam.
Vivekina.
Vivekina.
It's a long sutra. And kind of difficult to grasp. Now, what it says is that for a vivekinaha means one who has attained discriminative wisdom. That means who has almost, is close to being enlightened, basically. That's viveki. Vivekina means one who has attained a very high level of discriminatory wisdom. For that individual, he says that everything is suffering. Everything. Okay? Why is it all suffering? Because of the 3 characteristics mentioned here. Parinama, tapa, and sanskara. Parinama means transformation. Parinama means change, transformation. Even result of something of your action is called parinama. Any transformation that's going on in life at any time, at any level, that's parinama. Tapa means suffering, basically suffering. Tapa is suffering, and we'll briefly talk about that. Tapa. And samskara, we know samskara. So the dukkha, dukkha means pain, suffering. Dukkha is suffering. So dukkha and sukha are the 2 complementary words. Sukha means pleasure and dukkha means pain, okay? So, because of the pain caused by parinama, which is transformation, tapa, which is pain, it's a different kind of pain, samskara, which is all the impressions, okay? Because of all these 3, and because of the guna, vritti, virodha. What is guna? The 3 gunas. What is vritti? All the fluctuations of the mind, okay? And virodha means conflict. So the conflict which we always have with us because of the gunas, constant fluctuation of the gunas and the vrittis, that also causes pain. So for someone who has discriminatory wisdom, he understands that everything is suffering because we are always going through gunas and we are always going through vrittis, and because there's change constantly going on and there is some kind of suffering always going on, etc., etc. Everything is suffering. Any kind of pleasure that we feel is pleasurable is very, very temporary, not permanent. Okay? So everything is dukkham. Now, a quick understanding of the Buddhist principle, right? Does everyone know Buddhist 4 noble truths? All is, it starts with all is suffering, right? Sarvam dukkham. In the same sentence that Patanjali uses, sarvam dukkham, the Buddha used the same terminology, sarvam dukkham. Okay? So that's why, because there are certain similarities between Buddha and Patanjali, they claim that they were not too far from each other. Now, who was first, they don't know. Okay. So what are the Four Noble Truths? All is suffering, that's one. Yeah. Then? There is cause for suffering. Number two.
Alleviating the suffering.
Cause for suffering. Then there is a... The suffering can be eliminated or removed.
Staying on the path.
And then staying on the path, which they also have the eight-limbed path, remember?
Yeah.
They have the eight limbs path, the eightfold path. They don't call it the eight limbs of yoga, but they call it the eightfold path. Okay? So you follow that eightfold path to eliminate suffering. So yes, suffering, it's possible to eliminate that suffering, but you have to go through all that. Otherwise, unless you go through that, everything is suffering. That's Buddhist philosophy. Patanjali is roughly saying the same thing, that once you have a very good understanding of life, you recognize that it doesn't matter what you're going through, eventually it's going to be suffering. Okay? You know, we had so much discussion on this because it just led into so much discussion. Commentators have written pages and pages of commentary on this. And more commentary you read, more questions you have, more doubts you have, and more digging deeper into you have to go through. So it was a very long discussion that we had. And
what was the final outcome?
No, the final outcome is, same thing, that every pleasure is temporary. Because I think the finally what we understood is that all the pleasure and pain, all the joys and sorrows of life, they are all a part of prakriti. And prakriti is constantly changing, constantly. Why? Because gunas are constantly in flux. There's not a single moment that you have stability of the gunas. That's what they claim. Sattva, rajas and tamas are in a constant flux all the time. If you have sattva dominant at this moment, you might feel pleasure. You might feel some kind of peace or calm and quiet. But very next moment, rajas might take over. And then that might turn into pain or some kind of a discomfort or action or, greed or whatever. It might change that.
That's why you got to be the seer.
Hmm?
That's why you got to be the seer.
Exactly.
So if you're not one of discrimination, if you're someone who's not discriminated, is that implying that you'd be happier because you don't understand all the consequences and the anxiety that this experience? What is that implying?
I think that just means you'll be tossed about.
That's an interesting thought. If you're not one of discrimination, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe
you're less
be easier.
Bothered by all this.
Yeah, right, but no.
No, in some sense, ignorance is bliss, but eventually it all turns into pain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, you're right. Ignorance could be bliss, but eventually...
even from pleasure or pain, right?
Hmm?
We're supposed to practice detachment.
Yes, eventually,
from both
pleasure and pain.
Yeah.
Detachment.
Yeah.
Right. It doesn't mean don't experience pleasure. It doesn't mean don't experience pain. It's attachment to those experiences that's causing the problem. We had a long discussion because I always said, I like mangoes. And I have a lot of pleasure enjoying my mangoes. How can they say that it is suffering? I don't have any suffering when I eat mangoes.
But you want another one and that causes
the suffering.
Why don't they have any mangoes at the grocery store today?
Yeah.
Okay. So we had a lot of discussion on that. What exactly are we talking about here? And, eventually it turned out that I can have my mango and I can enjoy it. But I should not feel miserable if I don't have a mango.
Moderation.
All the mangoes don't taste the same.
That's right too. No, but that's part of my desire. I want this specific type of mango only. That's the only way I can enjoy it. So yeah, we had a lot of discussion on the very interesting discussion. But because everything it belongs to prakriti, I think that's where we sort of eventually settle down, that it's all happening in the prakriti, and prakriti is all in a state of turmoil all the time anyway, and the only way it can be settled down is to eventually attain that level of discriminatory wisdom that we're talking about. Enlightenment. That's the only way to end suffering. Then there'll be no suffering. Then it's gone.
But I keep getting back to the discrimination thing because it seems like there are people that don't seem to care about the consequences of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And they don't seem very miserable. So I guess ignorance is bliss. Is that what we're saying?
But eventually, may seem that way now, but is that permanent? That's the question.
Yeah, it's not.
Is that permanent? Do we know for sure that it is permanent?
It's not. Even millionaires, I mean, they...
No, but you're right. I mean, it seems that way, but it's not permanent at all.
No.
It can change any moment.
Birth
they still have to get sick.
Not even future, even this birth, you know, see them tomorrow and then they'll be miserable in some way or the other. It just seems that way right now. Okay. Let's read this. Laura, you want to read this?
Must accompany pain and suffering. Suffering caused by attachment, raga, to objects of enjoyment and aversion, dvesha, to objects that give pain. Desires are never satiated. Lust for objects of pleasure causes pain.
Again, these are just my thoughts based on what I read. Anything that comes out in this is what we just said. Four noble truths in Buddhism. We already talked about this. Okay. Do you want to read this again?
Three causes of pain mentioned in the sutra. Parinama, transformation. Everything constantly undergoes change. All change results in suffering. Tapa, mental anguish, threefold suffering. Adibhautika, mm-hmm. Caused by other living beings, wild animals, snakes, physical attacks, etc. Adhyatmika, caused through physical suffering or mental anguish, worries, depression, and anxiety. Adidaivika,
mm-hmm.
Caused through divine intervention, tsunamis, earthquakes, plague, fire, and old age. Samskaras, past impressions, bring about raga, attachment, and dvesha, aversion, resulting in suffering.
So these are the three categories mentioned in the sutra. Parinama, tapa, samskara, dukkhaihi, you know, all those stuff. So read this carefully and see if there is any thought that comes up in the mind. Take a few moments. You know, this threefold suffering, it's mentioned in many, many texts. It's mentioned in the Upanishads, it's mentioned in the Yoga Sutras, not specifically, but in the Sankhya philosophy also it says. In fact, the Sankhya philosophy starts with that. It says the whole purpose of the practices of yoga is to eliminate these three types of suffering. That's it. Once you have eliminated these three types of suffering, you're good to go. Now you made a home run after that.
This relates to the three shantis that we said.
Yes.
Right? Peace in all these three.
So we say the shanti three times, om shanti, shanti, shanti. Oh. They say it's because we want peace in all these three areas of suffering. That's why we say shanti three times. So adhyatmika, adhi bhautika, and adhi daivika. Those are the three types of suffering. Adhyatmika means self-imposed, self-inflicted sort of. Adhi bhautika means caused by physical beings, you know, other beings, or just somebody trying to hit you through you know, kick you through, shoot you, whatever, and then snakes biting or mosquitoes biting, noises, all kinds of suffering that we go through. Okay? And then, of course, Adidaivika is divine stuff. We know that. Earthquakes and all that. Okay. What's the next one? It's very commonly referenced sutra. Simple one, but let's read it. Heyam dukkham anagatam. So the whole sentence is Heyam dukkham anagatam. Pain that has not yet come is avoidable. Okay? So that means we should never worry about the future. We can eliminate pain in the future.
That's a little conflicting, though, because it just, we talked about when you're born, you have to have certain, you're going to, if you're, you know, going to be in a car accident in 5 years, you're sure going to do it. So, but then this says pain
is avoidable.
So you could avoid the car accident.
No. Car accident?
The pain that is caused by your mental anguish of having a car accident. Okay. Gotcha.
It's the pain that's caused by the accident.
Okay.
Not the accident itself.
Okay. Gotcha.
That's a very subtle distinction there.
Yeah.
And how do you avoid pain? Through enlightenment, that's it. Once you are enlightened, there's no pain.
Right.
But it can be done. That's the whole idea.
Of course.
So the pain that has not yet come is avoidable. Okay, and then the other observation is that from here on, I have not made any notes. So I have nothing to go by. I still haven't had time to make notes.
No, one question on the previous sutra, like, why everything is just around pain? Like, would that also apply for, like, joy or happiness?
Everything is the same, basically. What they're saying is even joy.
So
pleasure and pain, they are the two sides of the same coin. Yeah. And they go together. And if you have pleasure now, it eventually will turn into pain. Pleasure is short-lived, no matter what it is. You go on a vacation to Hawaii, you come back, you need another vacation to get rid of all your pain.
Right. And then all you want to do is plan, wait for the next one, so you're not even living in the moment.
Right.
Trying to get back there.
Okay. So actually, I think I would stop here today.